Good morning, Miss Lively's. What was this class again?
History
111?
History 111.
About the Pacific Islanders. Yeah.
Woo!
I'm your introductor, Ricky Fortin. We have
Jacob Bolin.
Jacob Bolin for America for the Nuclear Pacific. Mm. We got Luke.
We got
for
Luke
Clay, baby. France!
France!
Yeah!
And we got Avery.
Avery Adcock for the UK.
Yep.
All right. And going in first, we have Jacob with America.
Well, I thank you, good sir. Actually, what's interesting is that this is the 75th anniversary for the U.S.'s involvement in the nuclear Pacific. They actually ran this program for roughly around 12 years.
Hmm.
And they deemed it a the location was deemed a U.N. trust territory of 1947.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when they conducted all of their experiments.
Okay.
Great.
They did a total of roughly around 100 experiments, and 14% of them were in the Marshall Islands, and their most famous one being Operation Castle in 1954.
Mm. Okay.
So
did they build like a fort there?
They did build a type of fort there. They had this big whole type of experimental test site.
Oh.
With like many types of doctors and nuclear vehicles and all the types of stuff that
so
you
it was
could
a
imagine.
Nuclear fort.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting idea.
Very strange form of defense.
But the very first experiment that was ever conducted for the Pacific Islands was an operation known as Operation Crossroads. And this experiment occurred roughly around early July of 1946. They released two bombs that were called Able and Baker, and they used outdated World War II ships, and they released the bombs on the ships, and they actually did not sink. So they still remained floated in the water, and the entire nearby ocean surface became so impacted with radiation that all of the testing vessels had to be immediately abandoned by the crew and disposed of away.
Wow.
That's
actually
crazy.
When were Geiger counters invented? Would it like spike then during that time? If they were just standing there, it's just like, oh, well, that's a lot of ticks. I'm leaving.
Something like that, I would assume.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
The second experiment that was conducted was known as Operation Sandstone.
Mm-hmm.
And this mission occurred in 1948. They launched three nuclear bombs on Enwetok Atoll, and the operation following that was Operation Greenhouse, which was also conducted on the same atoll.
Very ironic name.
Ironic. Greenhouse.
Very, very ironic.
It's very ironic because greenhouse, of course, is symbolism of plant life. And with nuclear bombs, you're actually destroying all plant life. So kind of a bad symbolism there.
I mean, hey, if you're radiotizing, if that's a word for bananas, they're already radioactive, so.
Okay, fun fact.
I didn't know that.
I did not know that either.
Yeah, it's a measurement.
Interesting.
Well, what also interesting is the very first bomb that was used for Operation Greenhouse, it was named George. Why it was named George, who knows?
It's a really random name to pick for a bomb.
Yes, exactly. It's very, very, very random. 1 year later, though, Operation Ivy was conducted. You ever heard the phrase poison ivy?
I'm seeing a theme.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Very common theme.
Loved plants.
This experiment released two bombs, and they were known as Ivy King and Ivy Mike. Also very random names.
They're really good at naming things.
Yes,
Ivy King and just Mike, Ivy Mike.
Yep.
And this experiment was conducted roughly around the Marshall Islands. Okay. So it was nearby Australia. So
maybe it's scary for the Australians.
Very good point. Australia was very, very concerned about the nuclear testing program.
Rightfully so.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that they ended up working alongside the United States in all of their experiments. shortly after. In 1954, the U.S., along with Australia's watchful eye, I should say, conducted six nuclear tests on Bikini and Enwetok Atoll. And this operation was called Castle Bravo. It's one of the most famous of all nuclear experiments. The Australians were actually so afraid of the results of this bomb is they thought the islands would actually split apart and wither away from impact.
It's pretty massive.
Yeah.
To be fair, they weren't really islands. Most of them were just atolls, which is like a half-sunken island.
So honestly, that might have happened. You never know.
It was quite a possibility.
It is proclaimed that three atolls were just wiped off the map.
Oh, wow.
when that bomb specifically went off. Yes.
I did hear something like that, yeah. I believe that is true. But to make matters worse, Sydney, Australia, was like 3,000 miles away. So it was pretty close to receiving the war to be. Receiving basically effects, negative effects.
Very negative effects.
So feeling the effects of what
Effects. Effects.
I sure hope they're good effects.
Truly terrible
much like
effects.
Much like the video game Fallout or a comic, you're going to gain superpowers.
Yeah.
Woohoo. Going to shoot lasers out of my eyes now.
Grow a second head.
Are you insinuating that everyone in Sydney, Australia has superpowers?
To be fair, 70% of them, whenever they get like, become 70 years old, are designated with skin cancer.
Okay.
Wow. You are the man with all the facts.
Interesting.
But interestingly, though, after that experiment was conducted, throughout the next 12 years, the U.S. conducted approximately 66 atomic tests on Marshall Islands.
Oh, wow.
So its inhabitants did suffer from things like radiation poisoning, birth defects, diseases like cancer, and the destruction of four islands, as you so brilliantly mentioned.
It's terrible.
The inhabitants ended up becoming experiments for the doctors, which was not very pleasant at all.
The early 20th century seems to have a theme of experiments.
Experimentation was pretty common.
Yep.
It's terrible.
By the 1970s, the U.S. was kind of on the end note of atomic testing, and they started disposing all of their material on Runnet Island. The dome was established around 1977. It was, again, 3,000 miles away from Sydney, Australia, and they placed 70,000 cubic meters of radioactive material. So,
what was it contained in?
What
was it contained in? Was it just like a cone of concrete?
Yes.
Cone of concrete.
Cone of concrete above and underground. So.
With 70,000 cubic whatever metric measurements.
Cubic meters of radioactive material. So. By August 5th, 1963, the United States signed the Partial Nuclear Test Ban Treaty, which halted all of nuclear testing. But U.S. never likes to officially be finished with things.
No, never.
They decided to conduct another test on September 23rd, 1992, and it was actually in Nevada. They launched their nuclear bomb called the Divider in Nevada and completely obliterated the area full of radioactive material. It is still considered an uninhabitable place today.
Oh, wow.
And radiation does that.
And it's a threat to the world because it could spread everywhere with how much material was used. And after that mission, President George H.W. Bush decided to suspend all nuclear acts.
Hey, let's not try to blow up the world.
But,
it's a good idea.
Though the United States did sign the Partial Nuclear Test Ban Treaty, not all of the nations did. France in particular was one that did not sign it.
Luke, is there a reason why?
Yeah, so it's pretty interesting. Like, a lot of the information about the specific tests aren't really known because France like to keep it kind of in-house more than anything. But France has been testing. They tested for such a long time. Like
Longer than America over there?
Yeah, so Jacob mentioned the Partial Nuclear Test Ban Treaty or the Limited Test Ban Treaty, right? And like he said, France never signed it. So France first started in 1960. Their first test was at the Moroa Atoll in French Polynesia, which they had, obviously. Mm-hmm. And Moroa would, like, stay as, like, their number one testing location. They would just keep testing on that place forever. And the other being, Fangataufa. Hopefully I didn't say a slur. excuse me. So from 1966 to 96, there was a total of 193 nuclear tests done.
Oh, wow.
I did not know that.
Done at just Moroa and Fangataufa.
So basically.
That's crazy.
How many did you have? 44?
Yeah. How many did you have, Jacob?
We had 66 on Marshall Islands, and a total of 100 in particular for everywhere else.
So 193. And Moroa had 41 atmospheric tests done on it. And Fangataufa had only 4. But, you know, atmospheric tests are generally considered, like, really bad.
Well, yeah.
Really, really bad.
So, like, people wonder, like, why didn't France, like, sign the treaty, you know? But there is, like, some people think that they were, like, given incentives from America and Great Britain to continue testing, right?
Yes.
Great Britain and America were like, hey, we'll sign the treaty. And they're like, France, keep going. Keep going, France. Help us learn. So that's just a theory. There isn't really any actual proof. Mm-hmm. I couldn't find anything anyways.
I would find that very easy to believe, especially since the United States and Australia were such involved in
nuclear
testing.
Exactly. Yeah. It seems very likely. So it wasn't until 1996 that France would officially stop their testing with the sign of the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty.
What made them decide to stop?
So here's the thing. Here, I was about to get to it. So here's the thing. France was the first to put it forward, and you might be wondering, well, why would they do that? They're the ones who've been testing forever, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, what happened was 1 year before, in 95, French President Jacques Chirac decided to do a nuclear test in Moroa in 95. In 1995. And mm-hmm. so the global, like, rebuttal that got was massive. It was so big that actually there was an embargo on French wine.
Oh, wow.
People were like, we're not getting your wine.
They must have really cared.
We're not supporting your economy. Yeah. You kind of set off a nuke for the 163rd. I would assume that was the last one.
But then again, though, if they banned the French wine, what were they going to use to keep themselves motivated in the protests?
Who knows?
I don't know.
I don't know, man. But it was because, like, in 92, I believe in 92, it was when they stopped doing atmospheric testing and just did underground testing. Mm-hmm. But people were still like, stop testing. Just stop testing, period. And so when they decided to do another test at Moroa, you know, the world just was like, no, stop. And so because of that, I think that's why in 96, the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty became a thing, and France was the first to put it forward because they were receiving so much backlash from everyone else. So they signed it in 1996, and so they dismantled all their test sites. They're not testing anymore at the two atolls.
They didn't conduct a mission like the U.S., a secret mission on Nevada.
Not that we know of, anyways.
Yeah.
But, right now, Moroa is way too radioactive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No one can go there. It is. They actually have, like, ships guarding people from attempting to get into those areas.
I wonder if it'll ever be, like,
back to normal.
Yeah, like,
I'm not entirely sure. It was, you know, the site of so much testing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to know for sure. So what's interesting also is from 2012, a report showed that only 11 of the 20 monitoring systems at Moroa were actually working. So without those monitoring systems, it is totally possible for the atoll to collapse without their knowledge. So Moroa could just disappear and they wouldn't even know.
Oh my gosh.
Well, that's similar to Runnet Island that I mentioned earlier. Runnet Island has been suffering from severe negative environmental impacts. It's been a threat to from severe storms, of course, global warming, and the concrete facility is just in disrepair.
Yeah.
So it's causing nuclear waste to just leave the facility and go into the environment.
Yeah, so. It's very similar. I mean, who knows what would happen if this thing actually collapsed? maybe it would spread out, maybe something even more serious.
I mean, it would end up in the water.
Yeah, that's what it's
like. There already isn't enough in there.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. For that's sure. exactly what we need. It's just a little bit more.
Yay. We're in another Godzilla situation.
So as for Fangataufa, now it's just a lot of birds have it as its sanctuary. A lot of birds will go to it and stay there. But in 2006, they found the French Polynesian government found that the French government had lied to the local population about the effects of the atmospheric testing.
Of course they would.
So the a lot of military personnel would end up receiving compensation because of that.
Who knows? I bet that was a fun conversation to have.
Like, imagine going home and telling your wife, "Hey, I might be contaminated with."
Oh my god.
Hey, I might have cancer.
Yeah. Ugh. So, and I'll end with this, but a recent independent study in 2021, I believe, found that roughly 110,000 people were affected by the radioactive fallout that France did, and that was a result of France underestimated the amount of people affected.
Underestimated.
That's crazy.
So, and this was, quote, almost the entire population at the time.
Wow.
The amount of people affected.
That's crazy.
So France did not do a good job containing and controlling what they were doing.
Yeah.
Which does not bode well for the future of those places.
To definitely be fair, not. I don't think there's a very good way you can contain or control a nuke.
For sure.
Yeah,
that's
true.
That's
true. But I mean, you could consider it successful. I mean, they're the fourth largest country. I mean, the country with the fourth largest stockpile of nuclear warheads currently. So you could consider that successful or not.
Yeah.
Another one of those countries that has a large stockpile is the UK, right?
They do.
Oh.
It was very hard to find information about their stockpiles or if they still have any. If they don't, they like to keep that under wraps, I guess. There were 45 different tests performed between 1952 and 91, most of which were performed in Nevada with the U.S.
Okay.
They did combine their testing. Operation Tube Alloys in 1941 combined in 1963, I believe. Or no, it was 1943. Sorry, I got my date wrong. They merged with the Manhattan Project and started testing with the U.S. But before then, there was about 20 tests that were performed in the Pacific, starting with Operation Hurricane in 1952. That was performed in the Montebello Islands, which was the site of a lot of their tests.
Well, already that name is way cooler than everything America did.
So. Yeah, that's right.
We got Marshall. We got Fangate.
Fangataufa.
Fangataufa.
Fangataufa is the atoll, yes.
But yeah, a lot of their tests were performed in the Montebello Islands, Christmas Islands, Malden Island, Maralinga, Emu Field, all within that area. The UK really like to span across, from what I've noticed.
Goes with their history, huh?
Yeah, that really does go
really
with their history.
Went all over. But there was a ton of tests held there. They did stop when they signed the partial nuclear test ban. Unlike France.
Yeah.
Yes.
But they... Where am I at on here?
I don't know.
I can't read.
I'm illiterate.
So when they merged with the U.S. for the Manhattan Project, they did it in an attempt to basically advance further than everywhere else.
Yeah.
So when they merged, it was the U.S. wanting the different scientists from Europe. They used some German refugees. And they were just basically like building this insane force between two different countries.
Yeah.
Well, German scientists were commonly used by the United States and the Soviet Union, especially in things involving space travel as well.
Yeah.
Yep.
Rockets, bombs,
same
rockets,
thing,
and
right?
bombs.
Rockets and bombs.
Rockets and bombs. Rockets and bombs.
But the UK would buy missiles from the US. That was a very common thing. That started in 1963.
Wow.
Which is crazy, considering that's when they signed.
Isn't that, I was going to say that's when the test ban was signed.
At the same time, it's also not the first time that the UK has received weapons from the US. Great example, during World War II, they were given a surplus amount of Tommy guns for too much money.
Yeah.
Wow.
I didn't know that.
Who knew?
Why too much money?
The U.S. was like, hey, for one Tommy gun, you got to pay like $400.
Okay.
Okay. So we're going to send you 80 of them, and you got to pay us. And this is during a time period of which Britain was under great pressure during from
right.
Germany.
Yeah. Right, mm-hmm. right.
So essentially, the U.S. is like, hey, we're not going to get involved too directly, but just enough.
We'll try guns. To make money off of it.
Yeah.
Secret influence.
Secret. They were like, we're not doing this, but we totally yeah. are.
This yeah. very American weapon is clearly not from America.
Oh, yeah. Totally not.
But they wanted to join the powers with the U.S., obviously, the mm-hmm. U.S. having such a big influence with nuclear testing.
Mm-hmm.
So really finding just solely U.K. evidence was very hard. It was all very much merged with
okay.
the U.S. Okay. It was all a lot of the Manhattan Project. So the U.K. was involved mm-hmm. with that after 1943.
Also prevents them from being blamed.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of it,
true.
They didn't have very much blame going towards them, which
uh-huh.
a smart tactic, but also like
right
really why
mm-hmm.
but since then they have created many different like support systems, different ways to help people that have been affected by this. So we had lab rats, which represented nuclear veterans, atomic veterans, scientists, like any mm-hmm. of the general public that mm-hmm. was affected by this. That's just to offer them compensation, okay. to help them
yeah.
with different testing, just to see the different effects of what had happened, to collect like information.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the BNTVA, which mm-hmm. was set up in 1983 to gain the recognition and restitution for the British nuclear test vets, just to basically, again,
okay.
gain awareness for these
yeah.
people who went through all this
yeah.
and probably mm-hmm. had some struggling health issues at this point.
Yeah. I would imagine.
I think yeah. so.
Probably. Yeah.
But that was
so, yeah.
all it. Most of it, like I said, was with I the see. U.S.
It does kind of make sense, though, considering how much like Britain was hurt from World War II,
yeah.
right? When
quite,
you think
quite.
About it.
Yeah.
Like, they probably didn't have a real good way to start setting up their own initially.
Well, I mean, yeah. even after just their infrastructure in yeah. general was greatly affected.
Right.
That's I mean, also ironic.
Even nowadays, the said infrastructure has been still greatly affected.
Yeah.
Even mm-hmm. 80 years after, like, Great Britain was being bombed by Germany, they still today, numerous undetonated bombs are still being discovered.
Yeah. Like, there was just one not too long ago,
yeah,
I believe.
February.
Yeah.
February?
Yeah. Some really? Lady was renovating her small little garden, dug into her yard. It's like, huh, there's a metal thing I don't recognize. I'm going
to
dig it
that.
Up.
Yeah, they had
she
to shut down an entire, like, area.
Oh, yeah, no. Wow. She found a 500-kilogram bomb in her backyard.
Yeah.
Not even a joke. She legitimately found one. They're like, hey, we got to clear out this entire neighborhood and get a bomb squad to pull this out.
Yeah.
Well, at least she didn't cause it to explode.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. That's no. where I thought that story was going for a second. I was
like imagining like her hitting it with a yeah. shovel.
No, there's quite a few stories where there have been just live yeah. bombs in plain sight. Like there was one that was on display for a museum out in front of it. Mm-hmm. There's even a picture of a kid riding on top of it. Yeah, no, that's a live bomb
oh,
that they
my
just
gosh.
Never defused.
Wow. Low-key scary.
Yeah, that's so scary.
I don't know about that.
What do you want to imagine that kid became a daredevil?
I can see that. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Nuclear Pacific with Ricky.
Jacob.
Luke.
And Avery.
And I give you all a good afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you for
watching. Thank you.
Thank you for listening.
Yoo-hoo.